The following is an interview of Frederick Logan, Professor Emeritus of Art and Art Education of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, conducted on January 18, 1979, by Mark Van Pelt.
It's been interesting and important to me. When I was really very young, a person. Going all right?
Just keep going.
All right. Well, I was born in Racine, Wisconsin. Don't have that material here, but it's there. We lived on the south end of town. That meant we were about a block from what we call the old Racine College campus. Mm-hmm. Now that had been built in the 1870s, 1880s, and it was very much in the yellow brick Gothic style. And yeah. It also, now this was interesting, the people who started it were Episcopalians. They had come from England, and they wanted it as close as possible to be an imitation of Oxford. So, have you ever seen the place?
No, I've never been there.
Well, it's a small quadrangular campus with the dormitories along one side, a chapel in the middle, Gothic chapel in the center, two academic buildings on the other side, and of course heavily planted to trees. And in the first place, it had been built in one of the Wisconsin oak groves, in any event. Mm-hmm. Well, we were there at a time when it had been largely abandoned as a school, so it just sat there, and it was about a block from our house. So I remember that as a place that was very interesting to me. I liked to go up there with the kids, and we would run around the campus. There was a kind of a tunnel through one of the buildings, and if you've ever been in one of those in Oxford or Cambridge in England, these Gothic shaped pass-throughs are to be found all over. Of course, this perfectly blank walls, which made tremendous echoes as you ran through and yelled and hollered. Mm-hmm. And that was fascinating to a lot of us. But I do think that has always been, to me, a very fascinating thing, the enclosure of that space as a kind of a school place for itself. And then the other thing that I remember in Racine that was always interesting to me, to many kids is not, those were the years when people of my folks' economic bracket didn't have much money. So Sunday afternoon was a time to take walks. And we always walked up to the lake on Main Street, which was the for six or eight blocks, was the Mansion Row. And it had all of the big old houses of various stages. Well, I didn't know that at the time. But at the end of Main Street, and in the last fringe of land that hangs onto the lakefront, is the Frank Lloyd Wright Hardy House. I don't know if you know anything much about Wright.
Well, I know about him quite a bit, not that particular house much.
Well, that was fascinating to me, that house, because it was within 4 or 5 feet of the sidewalk. It had to be, because if it had not been, it would have to be out on the beach, virtually. But it was a very, very different thing, and I had no way of knowing why. My folks knew of it as a kind of a freaky thing, and they thought it was that way. But they cared enough about it always to comment on it whenever we passed by there.
What was your father's occupation?
Well, most of his life he spent, and he had never been through high school or college, but he spent it as a mechanical draftsman. And in those years, by the time we went to Milwaukee, which came in the war years, 1917, 1918, he got work as a mechanical engineer. And that's how he earned his living the rest of his life. Now, he was interested in drawing and painting. try it as a young man, I found out, not from him, but from things that we found in the house. He took international correspondence courses in drawing and cartooning, that sort of thing. And later on in Milwaukee, he joined the men's sketch club that used to go out on Sundays painting. Mm-hmm. So he was always interested in art. And when we did get to Milwaukee, I remember one of the first things that he did with us on a Sunday became rather traditional. My mother stayed home on Sunday afternoon and wrote letters to her sisters, which was a weekly event with her.
Right.
And he took us somewhere else, either down to the park to watch the football games or someplace. And so one of the first things we did was to go down to the old Layton Gallery. That time it was on, it was in the original Layton Gallery building. And I remember there the huge painting of the old French peasant man with a tremendous sack on his back, and his granddaughter presumably at his side. And this was in the dead center of the first entrance as you came into the Layton.
Wow.
Well, I don't know whether I thought it was good or bad or indifferent, but I remembered that because it was put in such a place that you had to remember it, you see. Good. Now, in Milwaukee, we went to school at our neighborhood school, which was, in the typical Milwaukee fashion, had artwork that we did in our grade school class. And I remember the fact that I was able to do pictures of boxes in perspective when I must have been in the fifth or sixth grade. Now that perspective is a kind of a curious measure of the degree that people have of ability to show things in a graphic manner. Some people will never understand perspective, and some people understand it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean by that everybody who understands perspective will be an artist. It's not true, but they're likely to be more easily adaptable to graphic art. So I know that that did happen to me. And then we later moved into the outskirts. That got me to the point where I began high school as a township student in what was then Wauwatosa High School. And that, too, was a strange school in terms of today's schooling.
Awesome.
We were in junior high school for a year, again in a building that had been built in the 1870s. And as I think back on it, today it would be condemned by the fire department. There were strange old staircases, old wooden staircases, some of them no more than 4 or 5 feet wide. The rooms are scattered about because it had been started in 1870. It had been added to in 1880 sometime, and again in 1890. And these curious old rooms just staggered about, two floors each. And we just wouldn't consider having children in a classroom in that kind of a building today. It would simply be condemned. And the old building across the street in the senior high was more modern, but it had a great, beautifully open staircase, two-story staircase, which again would never be built in a school because you couldn't close off the staircase if a fire started.
Mm-hmm.
But it was architecturally a very fine and interesting building that must have been built about 1910, there or thereabouts. And at that school, now I can't claim to have been an outstanding practicing artist because I haven't been. But I do remember a rather strange episode. I was in the basement of the senior high school. There was a doorway that I couldn't see into because it had a paper-colored device in the window. I was taking, at that time, 4 academic courses. It was the very beginning of the year. And I went home and told my folks, in all honesty, that there was a wonderful art room in the high school, and that I could take 2 hours of art for 1 credit. And I wanted to change my program.
What had you been in?
Oh, I had been taking Latin, English, probably history, and algebra. Everybody took the same things, more or less. You had one choice or elective, and I forget what that was, but I dropped that and took 2 credits of art on the basis of this wonderful art room, which turned out not to be the art room at all. It was a biology lab. Obviously, then, I was so much concerned with the idea of taking art that I invented an art room as an argument for taking art. So I took art for the year at Wauwatosa. And we later discovered that consisted of doing the high school annual. So there were 3 of us, Victor Volk, who later did cartooning for New Yorker magazine, and Sam Swerdloff, who became a commercial artist, and myself did the annual that year. That was our art course. It wouldn't be, again, the kind of thing that would happen today, but...
Did you actually have any guidance?
Yes. The teacher was interested in what we did in a literary kind of way. She wanted us to illustrate in a certain fashion. But really, she did not tell us much as to how to draw or in what way to draw. We invented that for ourselves.
That was your first school drawing experience?
Mm-hmm. That is officially in what was supposed to be an art class. Mm-hmm. Now, we had always done some drawings in the 5th, 6th, 7th grades, 8th grades. But then... We stayed in the same house, but the city of Milwaukee moved around us, so from there on, I went to Washington High School in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And there we did have a real professional art teacher, Rebecca Chase. And that was something else again. She was very, very good for her day. And in the late 30s, we engineered a kind of reunion of her students. And it really was a quite large and fairly impressive group of people. There must have been at least 50 of us at the party, and I would say 2/3 or 3/4 of the 50 had continued in one way and another in the arts. And there were many others whom we knew who were in the arts, but who were in other places in the country. Some of them wrote letters. And this was something that I think it's hard to experience today, because in Milwaukee at that time there were about 4 or 5 high schools. There was Washington, East, South, North. Lincoln hadn't begun to be built. Juniorwood didn't exist. And in each of those high schools, you knew who the art teacher was. And then in the 30s, when we were all at least grown up enough to have to earn our own living one way and another, you'd meet people in the arts and say, "Well, where did you come from?" "From South. Howard Thomas was my teacher. Bayview, Ed Berner was my teacher."
Mm-hmm.
Miss Skinner at East. These were persons of stature, you see.
Obviously, they had been part of the school system a long time.
Most of them had been there a long time. They were the only art teachers. And if you were in the arts in Milwaukee, you, in 99 cases out of 100, you had been a student of one of those people.
You made the comment that Rebecca Chase was good for her day. What do you mean by that?
Well, she was good in terms of the things that she knew and the experiences she had had. She had started teaching about 1911. She had been of the old Chase family in Milwaukee, which goes way back to almost the beginning 4 or 5 years that anybody lived in Milwaukee except the Indians. She had gone to school at the Chicago Art Institute. And she had spent a year or two in Paris painting.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't do a lot of things that art teachers try to do now. She never did much in the way of teaching us anything about the history of art. She didn't have very exact course ideas in mind. We more or less invented a curriculum as we went along. Some of us did work on the high school annuals. Art people almost invariably did the high school annuals. Didn't make any difference what else they did. Somebody pitched in and did the high school annuals. Al Sessler was in Washington during the years we were, and he later was on the faculty out here. And so that was part of what we did, but people tended to do the things in which they were interested. A good many of the girls did costume design, plates, that kind of thing. I was interested in drawing architectural kinds of material, which I did. People went their own way.
That was the standard method.
Well, I do remember this, and I don't know just how one arrived at it. People are unconscious about their high school career, at least I was. Those of us who really wanted to take a lot of work in art, we saved the 7th and the 8th periods. We took a double period at the end of the day. And that was saved for us. Everybody else would take Art 1 or Art 2 or Art 3 and take it during morning periods or early afternoon. But our group took it the last two periods of the day.
That was arranged in some subterranean way?
I don't know. I don't know. For instance, I don't know how I came to be able to do that. I heard that you could take two periods, the last two periods, and I signed up for it.
Uh-huh.
And when I got there, she didn't say I couldn't do it.
At this point, had you just decided to make art some sort of career for yourself, or
no.
How did you come on that?
Well, for one thing, we had no advisors, no counselors in the high school in those years, and I'm not sure we weren't just as well off. You just did whatever you could get away with. You took the basic requirements, which was usually in high school at that time, you took at least 3 years of English, and more likely four. You took 2 years of math, you took 2 years of a foreign language, you took 2 years of history or civics, and then you took electives. Very simple. No counselors, no guidance. I remember that a man in history told me that I was quite good in history. I should be a historian someday. I did quite well in writing, and I enjoyed the artwork. Well, I have stayed in connection with artwork all my life. I've written really the only history of art education that there is, so that's my historian's background, my writing background. So I didn't go too far astray from what high school teachers said I might do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't say that I did it because of them.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was enough of a clue to make me think, well, I could do something one way or the other, like that. At any rate, it was enough of a clue so that a good many of us were very much interested in the art work that we did. And as we got toward graduation, Miss Chase told a good many of us, including my wife and myself, we met in high school, that we could do quite well over at the Teachers College with Gustav Muller. Well, that was guidance, if you like. So that's what we did. Now that included, in our class, there was a girl by the name of Richard Kuhnman, the Meixner sisters, three of them, Paul Clemens, Schomer Lichtner had been there a little sooner than we, and a good many others. Now all of these people have continued to be active in the arts in various places in the United States. Most of them in Milwaukee or Wisconsin, and there were many others if I could think of all of them. So we went to the Teachers College. Now the background there was that the Teachers College had a president in the 1911 and 12 period, and this is where my interest in history came in. I dug this up later, who had felt that Milwaukee should have much more than just a teacher's college as a state higher education school. So he deliberately invited a struggling art school, which was called the Art Students League, to become the School of Fine Arts at the Milwaukee Normal.
Mm-hmm.
So they transferred lock, stock, and barrel and became the art department of the State Teachers College. But it was a lot more of an art department than most normal schools had ever had.
Mm.
He did the same thing with the music school, private music school. And for his troubles, after 6 or 8 years, the regents excused him from any further connection with the institution, but those two departments stayed there. And so in the 20s and early 30s, the teachers' colleges at that time had divided up special fields.
Right.
And Milwaukee was the special place for art and music teachers. And La Crosse was Phi Ed, which it continues to specialize into the present day. Stout Institute was manual arts.
Right.
So was Oshkosh.
Yeah, John Anderson made mention of the same.
And so on, you see. La Crosse, yeah, Phi Ed. So, we were in more than really just a normal school with a couple of art courses. There were actually more art instructors at Milwaukee than there were in Madison in those years. It was a bigger art department. So we went through there, and Clarice graduated in 1931, I graduated in 32. And we had both been very active at the college in various ways and more or less characteristic. I edited the school paper as a sophomore. It was a weekly paper.
Right.
The fact that I was a sophomore wasn't so remarkable because the school was still shifting over from graduating many two-year people to some three-year people. It was just beginning to graduate four-year degree people. So a lot of the school activities was carried on by sophomores and juniors. And in fact, it had just been changed from Milwaukee Normal School to Milwaukee State Teachers College, and had just been given the possibility of granting bachelor's degrees a year or two before we got there. So the fact that we were able to do so much in college activities, so many of the art department people being so active in the whole college, was partly because most of us stayed for the 4 years.
That made your department rather unusual compared to the rest of the...
Well, yes. Music and art were quite dominant at the time, because most of them stayed on as four-year students.
Were most of the people who taught in art department in Milwaukee local people, or, I mean, it's, you know, you mentioned Gustav Mahler.
Oh.
You know, now he could have been from Milwaukee easily enough, but were any of these people brought in from Europe or from elsewhere special as a result of this?
No, they were not. The background of most of them, Muller was born in Germany. Elsa Olbricht was a local person, but they were quite characteristic of their time. Elsa was trained in the late 90s as a kindergarten teacher, because kindergartners did a lot of work with what we'd call the crafts,
right,
and so on. She then became interested in the arts, began to be a weaver, and she went back down to Hull House, Jane Addams,
right,
Hull House, and then took courses at the Art Institute. So she spent time in Hull House, became a very close friend of Carl Sandburg's along the way, the poet,
right,
came back to Milwaukee and joined that art school, which then later became associated with the State Teachers College. Winifred Phillips was one of the first graduates of that art school, and she became the ceramics teacher. And Charlotte Major, who taught art education, was again herself a graduate of the department. Muller was born and raised in Milwaukee, but he had gone to one of the little old schools that had been held in attic floors downtown in the 1890s and early teens. And then he had gone to Germany for 2 or 3 years and gotten his training as a painter. And he came back. Well, then they finally, the normal school, Regents in the early 20s canceled out the fine arts school as such and said that the art department would have to become simply a school for the training of teachers of art for the schools. And so they did on the surface. Most of us, if we got the degree, we had to take the art education courses and the teacher training along with the studio work. But there were many students who just came, took work, put off the evil moment of taking the education work, and then finally went to work in commercial art places or wherever they could get a job. Some of them in the 30s went on the WPA projects, and many of them. See, Milwaukee is a big publishing center.
Mm-hmm.
That is, they publish what they call trade magazines.
Right.
So there have always been a lot of artists who do that kind of work in Milwaukee. And some of our graduates, our fellow graduates, did go into those fields. And then, of course, when we graduated in the 30s, the Depression was on. And very few people got teaching jobs. I suspect I got a teaching job because I had been active in these other things, like the journalism activity and some of those things. Many of my colleagues did not, so that most of my friends were on the various WPA art projects.
When you mean teaching at public schools?
I was in the public schools. I went, as a matter of fact, went right back to the school, to my high school, Washington High School.
You were Rebecca's replacement, or?
No, by that time they needed three people. And she had had a woman teacher, and I was the third. Then, as fortune had it, Rebecca had a serious accident and was out of school in the spring semester, so they hired another one of our friends, a girl, to take Rebecca's place. So there was Rebecca and myself teaching the spring semester. And I was foolish enough to have a run-in with the principal on what I felt to be a matter of importance to my students. So he told me I better leave.
Was that a great import, or what was that about?
Well, it was kind of a strange thing. Fortunately, there was a job at the junior high school up on the hill, Steuben Junior High, and I taught there for 8 years after that.
I gather the Teachers Association didn't have much to say about those kinds of things, and that the principal was fairly autonomous.
Oh, there was no teachers union at the time, and Teachers Association was extremely feeble. In fact, I don't know that there was one in Milwaukee. There was a Wisconsin Education Association. The thing that happened was this, that Balzer, who was the principal, had a very high idea about what his high school should do. It should have the best plays, the best newspaper, the best debaters, the best football team, etc., etc., mm-hmm. right down the line, you see. Mm-hmm. Well, the senior class was going to put on its usual play, and they came to me and asked if I would have my classes do posters. Well, I said, I have only the first semester and second semester students. And if they do posters, they will have to do them as best they can, as creatively as they can, but with such ability as they possess. I'm not going to force them into copying professional posters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very righteous about this, you know. Well, Balzer stamped all posters that went up in the building with his little stamp. So when those posters came down, kids had learned a lot about lettering, organization of pictures with lettering and all the rest, but they were primitive,
mm-hmm.
beginner's posters. And so he scolded me, and I scolded him for having an unprogressive attitude, you see. I don't know why I was so courageous or dumb, or both. But when it came time to make a decision between whether I should stay when Rebecca came back, or my friend Ruth Lore should stay, why, quite obviously, it was Ruth who stayed. And that was my first experience in becoming a little more aware of the diplomatic attitudes toward the administrators. Well, in those years, yes, Milwaukee principals, Milwaukee school system, was very, very positive. The principals dominated. They dominated the school board.
Not the superintendent.
Yes, they dominated the superintendent.
Hmm.
Potter was a very nice old man who wrote flowery comments to all of us on the occasion of every anniversary of a holiday. Christmas, uh-huh. Easter, George Washington's birthday, there would be this great flowery letter from Superintendent Potter on the bulletin board, and that's about as much as we ever heard from the superintendent.
Hmm.
For many years, the Milwaukee High School principals kept basketball out of the high schools. We played basketball in gym,
mm-hmm.
but there was no inter-school competition in basketball. Absolutely refused to have it. And on perfectly logical grounds, I'm not sure that it wouldn't be a good idea right now. Their attitude was, football is fine. Mm-hmm. You get started, it's good school spirit. The children are all out, they go to the games,
right.
Lots of fun. Then we want them to get down to work. Track is all right, it's good exercise, it doesn't attract the big crowds. But basketball would keep an atmosphere of carnival through the winter season when we should be at work. And they had a point. So that was a different school environment than any that you know anything about.
Yes. Well, I would think after you were removed, so to speak, from your position at the high school, that it would be very difficult for you to get a position somewhere else in the city. It seemed very simple.
Well, no, it wasn't. It wasn't quite that way. First of all, this was the depths of the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
So I was what was called a permanent substitute. I had to sign a substitute list every day when I came to school. I was paid on the basis of the number of days that I signed up. However, it is true that Mr. Pelican, who was art supervisor, and the principals really did not want to kick me out. Balzer didn't want me to stay. He had a choice to make. It was one or the other. He made the choice because he didn't want somebody who would disagree with him.
Mm-hmm.
But quite obviously, they also did give me first crack at any opening that existed, and there was this opening at the junior high school. As it turned out, it was infinitely better for me to go to the junior high.
Because?
Well, for a number of reasons. Which one of the first of all, because it was not my own school from which I graduated. And I think that was an advantage. And then because we had not had any junior highs when I was at that level, that age. The second thing was that principal had a very, very active stage program. We had a full stage in the building. And every Friday morning, there was a stage performance. And one of my jobs was to run the stage and operate the thing, which I could have done simply mechanically.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, I began to think of it in terms of a design problem. What kids could do. If we were going to do a science demonstration, we got together a background that would be science.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a play, we made a play. So over the years, I really worked out a very good working arrangement for that. I had a crew, and I had three design teams that would work 3 weeks ahead. Design first, make the backgrounds, assemble in light, and then the next group would do this, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And it really became a very creative and a very interesting job. I was pleased with the way it worked out. And the principal was very pleased. He virtually let me do anything of the sort that I wanted to do. And gave me a lot of time to do it.
Mm-hmm. What kind of background were the kids that you were working with there?
Well, 7th, 8th, and 9th grades at that time, the junior high.
Were they primarily German kids of German descent or
yes,
immigrant children?
Yes. Do you know Milwaukee at all well?
Fairly, yes.
No. Well, Steuben is up there on 52nd and North Avenue,
mm-hmm.
if you know that area at all.
Well, what ward would that be?
I guess it was the 22nd Ward.
Okay.
But at that time, that is, I think Washington is now over 50% black.
Mm-hmm.
And Steuben is becoming 30 to 40% black. At that time, I would say it was a sprinkling of just more or less Anglo-Saxon background. Probably 60% Germanic. And about 30% German or Russian Jews. And this was the 30s. We had some problem which never was permitted to surface. That is, Tiefenthaler was a hard-boiled old German, and he was not going to let this kind of thing destroy his school. So, but we would, for instance, when we would have homeroom elections of officers and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
there would be those who would mark the name of a German student as their choice with a swastika. So there was an underground nastiness mm-hmm. among a small group of students.
Okay, you were...
Well, now during that same period of time, the 30s, Clarice and I weren't married till 34, although we would like to have made that different. But My dad lost his job in 30, 31. And things were pretty tight all around, so you just didn't go ahead and do what you wanted most to do necessarily. You did what got people through. But in the meanwhile, we were both very active in the Wisconsin Painters and Sculptors. That's still an association that operates in Milwaukee. But in those years, it was the artist group in the state. You went to an art school, but if you stayed in the state and were active in the arts, what you hoped to do was to be invited to membership in the Wisconsin Painters and Sculptors. If you were a craftsperson, it would be the Wisconsin Designer Craftsman. And these organizations meant a great deal. It was you could get accepted for an exhibit now and then, but until you got invited to membership, you hadn't quite made it, if you follow me.
Mm-hmm.
So we were both invited into the Painters and Sculptors, and then characteristic of the kind of thing that happens in a kind of a stressful period like the Depression years, our younger group got together, and I really, you get so busy and so involved in these things, you don't quite know how it happened, but I suppose I organized it. Don't remember what I must have done to do so exactly. Or maybe Al Sessler organized, and Al was one of those people who was always organizing other people. If you know what I mean?
Yes.
At any rate, I was elected president of the Painters and Sculptors in the same year that we were married, which was 1934. And that went along quite actively and interestingly, because in those years, the Wisconsin Painters and Sculptors bargained with the director of the Art Institute every time that we had a major exhibition, which was every year in the month of April. So the director of the Art Institute was the director of art in the public schools, namely my boss. So he would come and visit me in school and tell me all the things that he felt I ought to be doing. And then I would go down on Saturday morning with a group of artists, and we would tell him what we thought he had to do to run this exhibit. I wasn't sure how he was going to take this. Neither were the rest of us, but it was interesting. And then we'd repeat this every year, you see. He would be visiting me in my classroom, and then I'd go down and visit him at the Art Institute with the shoe on the other foot.
The power of suggestion.
Yes. And then later it got to another rather interesting factor, and that is that he came to resent my activity with this stage. He felt that it detracted from the rest of my program, which I didn't feel was the case at all.
You were overboard.
Yes. And you have to know the politics of the Milwaukee school system at the time. It didn't make any difference to me what he thought. Because if you were in solid with your principal, you had it made.
Right.
And I think that's still essentially, and maybe it isn't quite as true anymore.
Yeah.
It used to be.
Yeah.
So we did have that kind of activity going on. And then,
okay, all set.
Right. Well, then before the decade was out, we ran into a further problem. The projects, the federal projects, were being fought quite consistently and regularly. They had become quite diverse at that time. There was the Painters and Sculptors projects, the Crafts projects. Elsa Albrecht had organized the Craft project on a very colossal basis. I don't know how many people know about that sort of thing, but what she did was to get together about 700 or 800 unemployed women, most of them people who lived in or near the downtown area, and most of them fairly newcomers to the Milwaukee area. That is, they simply didn't have money. Many of them were among the black people who had begun to come up from the southern states. Many of them were poor white people from Kentucky, Tennessee areas, and they simply had no means of livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
So they hired several hundred of these people, and they hired mostly the women graduates from the Teachers College and Layton School of Art design staffs. And they designed dolls, wall hangings, dolls for nursery schools and for kindergarten classes, books for binding, costumes for plays and schoolhouses, even furniture for schools. Claire Westcott was the furniture designer. That's a man, Clarence Westcott. And anything that could be used by public institutions, they designed. Then they had the women, they gave the women patterns, and they would make these in a mass production outlet. And it was a very, very interesting project, and was the materials from it were exhibited all over the country. So that was a very good project. And there were a number of other projects. The painters' projects, painters and sculptors, any public institution could come down and indicate paintings that they wanted for their school or hospital, city hall or whatever. They paid a tiny sum for presumably the materials that went into it.
Mm-hmm.
The government paid all the salaries, $94 a month. Zingali was one of those people.
Oh, really?
And my wife, Clarice, was a designer in the craft project for quite a while. Well, those were always under attack federally, and people wanted to close them down, you see. So we as an artist organization federated all of the organizations of the painters and sculptors, the craftsmen, the printmakers, into one group which we call the Wisconsin Artists Federation. And the reason we did that was that it was more effective in a political sense. And so that continued pretty much up to the beginning of the war years. A lot of this just completely fell apart, of course, with Pearl Harbor. It was just within weeks or months it was all through. But these things were important at the time. And I think it's true that a great many of the people who were on the artist projects did become some of the college teachers in 46 and 47, when there was this great rush of GI people into the art departments of the universities. We had at least two here. Sessler and Zingali were both WPA people. And they had never taught public schools because there was no public school job for them to get. So they both had public school preparation.
Mm-hmm.
But they had spent the time on the WPA projects.
How did you come then to Normal?
Well, in 1941, Howard Thomas called me in the spring and asked if I would teach a course at a conservation camp that the state teachers' colleges were running in Eagle River.
A CCC camp?
No, it was a thing called Trees for Tomorrow. The forestry companies had put together a kind of a little campus just on the outskirts of Eagle River, which they hoped to use as a kind of a center for forestry education.
It was private then?
The buildings were private.
Mm-hmm.
The colleges were asked, would they like to run a summer session devoting itself primarily to conservation and natural resources and mm-hmm. so on at the college, at that little place. There were dormitories and a meeting hall and a dining room and a four-car garage, which the male faculty used for a place to sleep.
Who was Thomas?
Well, Howard Thomas was at that time head of the art department.
Okay.
Gustav Muller had died while we were in school, and Howard Thomas had become head of the department. And the reason they wanted to have a drawing class with this conservation class was that they were afraid that if they just had a course strictly of biology and biology and biology, it would be pretty unattractive.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a course primarily drawing and painting, but presumably the natural subject matter of the area, and I ran that course. And Howard Thomas was going to take a year's leave of absence, so he asked me if I would not only run the summer session, but teach in his place in 41, because I had been active through the city in these painters' organizations and so on, and so he felt that he wanted me to do this. And of course, I took a year's leave of absence from the public system and taught the class. And then it developed that he wanted to stay away another year. And the school would not extend my leave. President Baker of the Teachers College gave it as his guess that Howard would never be back. And so I just stayed on, though it upset my parents somewhat. And
why was that?
Well, I was then left out of the school system.
Oh, that's security.
Yes, and as somebody brought up in the decade of the 30s, that was considerably more important than mm-hmm. it seems to you at mm-hmm. this moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I just had a feeling, and so did Clarice, that Baker wasn't just mentioning the possibility that Mr. Thomas wouldn't be back just for nothing. What he really meant, I believe, was that he was quite sure he wouldn't be back, but that Thomas had not agreed yet to resign.
Did you have any acquaintance with Baker before?
Oh, yes. He had been president while we were in school.
Now, to me, I knew who the president was when I was in school, but that didn't mean that.
Well, you must remember that in the 30s, the enrollment, the total enrollment was 1,200
mm-hmm.
at the college. And Clarice was at one time editor of the yearbook. I was editor of the college paper. We were very active in the school. And indeed very snippety. I was quite able to run critical comments on the way in which the Teachers College was run and all the rest of it. And we had a Commonwealth which collected $10 from every student on campus, and the Commonwealth ran its own budget without even asking President Baker anything. Baker was an ardent small D Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
He believed in the students running their own affairs. And one time he called me into the office and asked me about certain articles that we had been running. I forget, we were irritating some teacher or other in the way of undergraduates,
right.
You know.
I understand.
Which is commonplace today, but it wasn't all that commonplace then. And I told him what we thought we were doing, and he said, well, you could be a little bit more kindly about it. And I said, yes, I suppose we could. And he said, well, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? And but we knew him, yes. Anybody who was in the, a little bit in the upper echelons among the student body knew the president.
Okay, well, I just wanted to.
There were fewer of us than most high schools today.
Yes.
And we were there for 4 years, and those of us who were active, he came to know.
And probably not very many four-year students either.
There weren't. Less than half of the 1,200 were four-year students.
Right.
And then our group was active. Zingali, for instance, would be exhibiting in the professional exhibits before he was a junior. Well, Baker knew that. He knew Zingali. He knew Clarice. He knew me. He knew most of our gang. Because we were active not only in the college, but in the city.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had a better break than some of you get today.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense.
Yeah, it's quite different.
You know, we could push ourselves into things a little more easily. The herd
let's
wasn't as big.
It's put off to graduate school now, I think, from a lot of that.
I think that's true, yes. I do. It was assumed that we'd attain some maturity by the time we were seniors.
Mm-hmm. Now, after you began at Milwaukee and that sort of thing, then how is it that you managed to come to the UW?
Well,
particularly since Milwaukee seemed to have such the edge on the arts, so to speak.
Well, in the first place, when Howard left, Howard Thomas left, Elsa Albrecht was made chairman, acting chairman. And she should have been acting chairman in all ways. She had the seniority, and she was known throughout the state and to a certain extent nationally. She was, however, not really a very skilled administrator in the details of running something. Mm-hmm. And Baker knew that I was good at those things. But Mr. Baker was one of those men who was a Democrat in his thinking and an autocrat in his performance. So in February of my second year, he asked me to come in the office, and he said, "Now, Fred, I'm going to make you chairman." And I thought, as a person would of my years, well, that's great in a way. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, you know, this is not going to be well received.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to make that point, and he said, "Well, no, we'd have trouble, but something had to be done."
Uh-huh.
And I won't go into the way in which Elsa performed as chairman, but it was, the personal leadership was very much there, but the business of the drudgery of taking care of the details was not one of her major things. She mm-hmm. was always a great teacher, but not an administrative drudge. Mm-hmm. And an administrator has to be a drudge.
Yes.
Part of the time.
I could see that from reading all your memoranda from Nigeria. It's quite a...
You have to know what you're up to and what everybody else is up to and how to evaluate it. Well, you see what I mean. So he did that without announcement to anybody. I couldn't say a word.
He didn't let you say anything?
Nothing. It wasn't under discussion. All of a sudden it was...
Was this at the beginning of an academic year, at least?
No, it was at the end of an academic year that he dropped the message.
The back door.
So there I was, chairman over a department that was small, six people, and everybody but one of them had been my teachers. Well, I wouldn't have done it if I had had more sensitivity, uh-huh. but at that age, one does take those things.
You were, what, early, late 20s, early 30s?
Oh, no, not quite that young, but let's see, 41, 32 years old. So it went along, and the problem was complicated by the fact that one of my very close friends, Harold Westcott, had been hired by Howard Thomas much earlier in the late 30s as a design teacher, and then he had been drafted into the service. And that, together with Howard's departure, left me with the job. You see, we had two children by that time, so that I was not eligible for the draft, thank goodness. And one thing led to another. Things got, well, never really did settle down very well. The school was comprised almost entirely of female students. We had very few males, perhaps 100 in the entire college. And of course, those are mostly boys who just couldn't be taken in the service, and it didn't make life very happy for them either, because they felt kind of rejected. And
mm-hmm.
It was a difficult time for many, many people. Girls were all writing letters like mad to boyfriends all over the world. That's not a real great substitute either. And so it was a hard few years. And we were having, well, then Sessler and Joe Friebert and one or two others Sessler had had a childhood injury. He couldn't possibly be taken in the Army. And so I told Sessler, I said, well, now, Alger, you ought to get back here and take your teacher training, get your teaching certification and your bachelor's degree, because he had only gotten a Layton graduation, no college degree at all. So he did that, and did his practice teaching in my classes, which is interesting. And then he came out here to get a master's degree,
mm-hmm.
which was the master's degree he started in 45. We had taken a little cottage out here in Lake Gansa for the summer, and I was still trudging along as chairman for the department in Milwaukee. And Mr. Varnum, who started this department in 1911, I met, went in and visited with Varnum. Very, very big man, very overweight. And all of a sudden, 4th of July, he died. Almost the same day, John Stuart Curry, who was artist in residence, died. And so Sessler said, well, why don't you apply to come out here? Because Sessler was going to become an instructor here, you see. And by this time, we knew that everywhere the GIs were coming back to school in September. Milwaukee State expected in the neighborhood of 3,000 students, though they had never gone above 1,400.
This
out here, that was 1946, the summer of 46. Out here, they had been down to around 9 or 10,000, or even 8,000 at times. They expected 18,000. Now, that's doubling.
Yes.
And Al said, why don't you do that? And I said, well, after all, Milwaukee is still the bigger department that has the prestige, has this, has that. And then all of a sudden it developed that President Baker was leaving, retiring. J. Martin Clatchy was going to take over. I tried to see Clatchy. He was in Maine on the seacoast somewhere. So I couldn't talk to him. And so I did come out here and talk to Miss Wilson and Della Wilson, that is, and Helen Anna.
Going back a second, was Clatchy already connected with
Clatchy was to be the president.
You haven't been connected with it before that.
Yes, I had. I had been a member of his first class at Milwaukee Normal.
So you knew him well then?
Yes. Okay. He had himself started to teach there the last year that I was a student. And I was in one of his first history classes.
No, I just need to clear that.
But he was to be Baker's successor as president. And strangely enough, he never came back that summer. He let Norris, who was his associate president, hire all the new faculty. I've never understood why that was done that way. Well, at any rate, it was a very strange fruit basket upset thing. I went in to see President Baker, and he said, well, I think I'm going to hire Mr. Zingale. He liked Zingale very much.
Mm-hmm.
Always had liked him. I said, well, that would be good. And then I had suggested Burton Potterveld, and he thought, yes, he'd like to talk to Burton. And then I came out here, and Sessler said, well, Mrs. Annan and Miss Wilson had talked to Zingale. They wanted to have Zingale out here so Zingale could be in either place. And then I visited with them out here, and they thought they'd like for me to come out. But they said, you must see Mr. Foulkes, because you see, Zingale and Sessler, since they had just finished a master's degree, were to be hired as instructors at that time. We began lower on the totem pole in those years, and I was to be a professor I wouldn't come if I weren't. I'd already taught so many years, both in the public schools and in the college. So I was to see Foulkes. Well, those of you who have never seen Mr. Foulkes don't know what manner of person he was, but he was indeed one of this university's characters. He was one of those people who wanted to get right at the crux of the matter. How much of a resilience do you have, in other words?
Right. So
he tried to nail me on the wall, and I felt moderately at ease because I didn't really have to come out here. I didn't feel like him. Which was fortunate, because I of course later found out, it was quite evident anyway, that if you buckled under to him, you were nowhere. You either stood up to this kind of heckling, or he didn't really want to talk to you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a half an hour's conference, and parted more or less at swords points. Not really, because he had rather enjoyed the fact that I hadn't cracked wide open. And so both Svengali and I were left with the opportunity to go either direction. And I just decided that since I couldn't even talk to the president of Milwaukee, and the person he had delegated to the task was completely in the fog, I decided I would try something else. And that was it. And it was, I think it was, for me, it was a very good choice, and it was a good choice for Milwaukee, because I do think that probably, well, I'm optimistic enough to assume that I would have managed finally to overcome the problems. But I think it worked out better the way it was. We had a lot of problems in all colleges from 46 to 50, 52, 53.
Mm-hmm.
Because the just the sheer enormity of coping was something. I remember this was a rather odd thing. John Guy Foulkes was dean of the summer school.
Right.
He was not dean of the School of Education yet.
No, John Anderson was.
Yes, John Anderson.
Charles Anderson. No.
Charles Anderson. But John Guy was the one who did all the hiring for the next year. And so after all this was over, I came out in September, and it was to Anderson that we were responsible for another year. Then I think after that, Foulkes did in fact become dean.
Well, if I remember correctly, Anderson retired in 45.
No, he was there 1 year at least, because
right.
When I came in, I was to do the kind of a survey of contemporary art that that Mr. Barnum had done all those years. Well, I had been doing that kind of course in Milwaukee, and when I came in here, I had 80 students, and I had a little bit of a Translux screen that was yellow with age. Do you know what a Translux screen is?
I don't think
you
I
project
do.
From the back.
Uh-huh.
So you're sitting in front, and you've got a projector right in back of it.
Oh, I see.
It's a lousy, lousy image, because you don't get any light right on your screen.
Mm-hmm.
So here's this yellow silk screen, about 30 inches wide at the most, 80 people out in front, and I had to do a course like that. So we went up to Anderson, and he said, "What do you want?" And I said, "Well, I want a new screen for this very large class that we have. We must have it." "How big is your screen?" I told him. "Well," he said, "what would you prefer?" And I said, "Well, what I must have is a 8 by 11 foot screen stretched on a piece of canvas and taut at the sides, as you would make a tent taut with strings. How much would that cost? I said about $500.
Oops.
I must say he held on, you know, but he did have the GI money, you see. So times did change rather quickly.
Yeah.
They had to. Because they had been accustomed to classes 4 to 15.
What a luxury. Yeah.
And that was the end of that.
Let's stop. Okay. Sort of going to take a jump here. And I'd like to talk to you a while about your work on the creation of the elementary education program at the University of Wisconsin. As I remember correctly, Virgil Herrick was the chairman of the committee.
True.
The committee had 26 people on it. what did you all do? I mean,
well, I've often wondered about that committee. Actually, the 26 people represented all of the possible instructional departments which might be expected to contribute some part of the work that any person in elementary education would ever take. So that, and this included very many people in the College of Letters and Science, as you've noted, haven't you?
Well, Robert Pooley, I noticed.
Yes, English.
But some of the other
ILS.
Names I wasn't so.
Well, he would have been in ILS. The ILS program and English. We would have represented the English area.
Well, I mean, while I'm looking for that, who, in a committee that large, doesn't seem likely that you're all going to have very much of an equal say. Were there certain people who seemed to more or less control the general drift of how that was going?
Well, yes. The people that were directly concerned with the elementary methods course and with the elementary student teaching activities, of course, were the guiding lights in the committee. Now, I think you have to go back a little bit. Do you have any idea how many departments there were in the School of Education at the time that committee was formed? I don't remember exactly.
Well, there was the Department of Education.
Right.
Art and the two physical education departments,
yes.
And I believe that's all.
Right.
Now, education methods had folded.
Right. Now, the thing is, you have to have a little different attitude about what the School of Education was in those years. You see, in those years, when we had a meeting of the School of Education, or the Department of Education, I should say, there was always expected to be one person from every field of knowledge that prepared secondary or elementary teachers. So there was art, music, sciences, math, English, speech, you name it. Every area that prepared either an elementary or a secondary teacher had this person who was supposedly in two different departments. Like Pello was in the sciences and in the education department.
Right.
I was in the art department and in the education department. Pooley was in English and in the education department.
Now I have a question now. I've always considered Pooley, myself, from what I understand of him, to have been primarily English, and then his involvement in education was sort of because he was necessary. On the other hand, I always thought of Mr. Pella as being essentially education, and not really that associated with any
academic
department.
Well, yes, there was the other person in English, John. That name.
I got a list of the committee.
And he and Pooley worked very closely together in the matter of English.
Really not.
Yes, but.
Oh, yeah, it's not.
So. Fran Shoemaker was in English and education, and he called it communications. He went on to Columbia in communications. But that still is not the one I'm looking for.
No one on this list.
Right. Yes, somebody's missing here, and I can't bring his name to mind exactly.
Not Rothney or...
No, Rothney is guidance.
Yeah.
Burr Phillips was sociology and history. Pooley was English and ILS. Nimick was elementary. John Mayer was math. Fulton, Little, Irwin. John Schacht or something like that. I must look it up. But at any rate, we had just this one department of education, and so really you got to know all of these people in all of these fields. Well, in essence, what these people became curriculum and instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see Ed Sykes split apart. We never saw the psychologists again. They were there somewhere, but...
You mean as early as 1946?
Whenever that happened. Oh, no, not in 46.
No, no.
In
46,
it was just the education department, and then the separate instructional departments, such as art, music, not elementary, secondary.
Right.
So really, the education department was secondary methods and special methods people. By special methods was art, music, dance, Fayette. So there was a very close, all these people had very close ties to the College of Letters and Science.
Right. Now, I saw that Herrick was hired or came onto the staff probably about early 1948.
Uh-huh.
Was he brought in especially to set up the elementary education program?
Yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think he did get his doctorate here, did he not?
I don't know.
No, he didn't either. He didn't. He got it at... I think he did. I think he was a John Guy Fawkes advisee, and then he went and taught at the University of Chicago. Or possibly he got his degree at Chicago. But he was very close in a personal and professional sense to John Guy Fawkes. He was definitely brought in by Fawkes as the leading personality in getting this elementary ed program started.
Okay.
Now, the whole idea of the elementary program, too, was not for the university to compete with the then teachers' colleges. It was felt that they, after all, would continue indefinitely to provide the large number of elementary ed people required.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually felt that we ought to have a relatively small group of people in elementary ed so that the rest of us could be working with an elementary ed program, that we had a lack in the School of Ed generally in not having any elementary ed program at all, that the people in the ed administration needed to have some experience with elementary education trainees, that the people in art and music and dance and drama needed to have some connection with an elementary ed program,
mm-hmm.
You see? So it was thought of as a highly selective group of students who would provide a relatively small program in terms of numbers so that we would have a complete grouping of educational programs.
Yeah. Now I can see when you talk about small and kind of special arrangement in that I came across the fact that at least the original proposal was to try to funnel elementary ed majors through ILS as much as possible.
Yes, it was to be a program that would, one of the things they got a lot of, I think, Rockefeller money to fund it. And one of the ideas was that elementary education was becoming eaten up with a college program that was far too much, 75% methodology, and almost no college education. Yes.
Now, I don't know exactly what happened, but it seems fairly clear that ILS is not the course that people ended up going when it began.
No, they didn't. There was no great zeal for them to crowd into ILS. The hope was that they might, but as I understand it, very few of them ever did.
With Pooley as part of your committee and that sort of thing, wasn't it fairly clear that that was going to be the case?
Well, it was going to be, the idea was that they would be strongly urged to either to take ILS or to take a two-year program that would be very, very strong in liberal arts, and that their work in anything that might smack of methods in the elementary school would be deferred at least until the junior year, that their first 2 years would clearly be liberal arts in intention.
Mm-hmm.
And the ideal was, by all means, let's encourage them, if possible, to get them into the ILS program.
Now, I came across one document that mentioned that in 1938, which is before you came, but in 1938 the School of Education had established a policy about trying to not distinguish between different teaching programs. That is, that the core of teaching would be the same whether you're in elementary or special or secondary, whatever.
Yeah.
And it seems that despite the fact that the purpose of the UW program was to increase academic work as opposed to professional work, shall I say, that it ended up being quite different and still much more heavily concentrated on professional coursework and less on academic coursework than the secondary program was.
Yeah.
Why didn't you have a requirement that elementary teachers have a major as other people did? Why did you go the route of concentrations, which in comparison to an ordinary major were rather weak?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me get at that in a couple of different ways. First of all, that idea that all teachers should have about the same background.
Mm-hmm.
When I came here, there were three basic courses in education: school and society, child, his nature and his needs, that sort of thing, and what was the other one? Ed psych, some kind of ed psych. So everybody, art, music, elementary ed, when it came into being, secondary ed of any persuasion, we all had those three courses, a 9-credit batch. Everybody took those. Didn't make any difference what their special area was to be. But it had come to be a little ridiculous in certain respects, because there was the one of the three, I think the school and society one, I don't remember exactly, was supposed to be 3 credits academic and 2 credits observation, making a total of 5, and the other two were 3 credits each. Well, what we wound up with the enormous enrollment increase was we would wind up with Ruth Alcott at that time was teaching Wisconsin High School. She'd have 16 kids in the Wisconsin High School. So we'd have our people taking art in secondary education, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they would also be taking this course where Ruth was supposed to give them 2 credits and somebody in the art department the other 3 credits. So 16 students out there at Wisconsin High School and 22 college students would go out to observe. And the whole thing became absolutely asinine, you see. Uh-huh. So what we finally wound up with was the next step on John Guy's ambitious program was this internship thing, 10 credits for student teaching, a whole semester to student teaching.
Now, I understand that the observer to student ratio at Wisconsin High had always been rather strange anyway, and
it was quite bad at best, but it became ridiculous with the GI crowds, you see. And the whole idea of observing as a group, as a class group, mm-hmm. going to observe a high school class was an asinine idea to start with.
Yeah.
Utterly ridiculous.
Now, then going back a little bit to the earlier question, why then the idea of a concentration as opposed to an ordinary major?
Well, of course, the ordinary major in secondary, whether one thinks it wasn't concentrated on teaching or was not, is
in itself impossible. What you really got, of course, was that a secondary teacher would have his concentration in English, and he would then train to teach English. Mm-hmm. But the elementary people were expected to have some competence in language, in elementary math, in sciences, and in social studies. Wasn't that it, those four?
Yes, I would think.
So they had to get, the thought was that if you prepared them properly, they had to have at least some credits on a college level beyond high school, carrying their inquiry, so to speak, further in all four areas.
Did that seem reasonable? I mean, did most of the people on the committee agree to that?
It seemed reasonable. I was among many, certainly not original, who said, if we're going to try to make these people better academic scholars and still make them better elementary teachers, we'd better have a 5-year bachelor's degree program. Because it seemed at the outset impossible to do the whole thing, including a semester devoted primarily practice teaching.
And that was less than a lot of the teachers' colleges did around the state, wasn't it?
Well, that's true, yes. The teachers' colleges, of course, have always... Well, as they came up, of course, see, all the teachers' colleges had gone through these curious things of, to begin with, you went to a high school if a high school was available, and to start with, the senior year in high school was teacher training.
Mm-hmm. Right.
For a while.
Right.
Then they gave you 4 years in high school and 1 year in a normal school prepared you for elementary teaching. 2 years prepared you for high school. Mm-hmm. Then finally it worked around so that in the period about, if I think my educational history is nearly correct, somewhere from 1890 to about 1920, if you had a good so-called liberal arts degree from a good college, you could teach high school and you didn't have to have any teacher training.
That was probably true.
Now, most of the high school teachers that Clarice and I had at Washington, I would say that half or 75% of those men and women were graduates of Carroll, Lawrence, Ripon, and I doubt if they had any teacher credits at all. Mm-hmm. They simply had a good bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.